smarterpodcasts.com, delivering sound advice.
Welcome to Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf number 32. My name is Fred Green, and we thank you for joining us for another episode of Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf. Our resident expert on all these things you're curious to know is Kenny Nicholson, technical specialist at Edwin Watts Golf and edwinwattsgolf.com. Hey, Kenny.
Good morning, Fred. How are you?
I'm fine, buddy. Congratulations.
On what's that?
On the Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf podcast being up for a People's Choice Podcast Award.
I got that email when I was out of town and was shocked.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah, it's awesome.
Well, the way it worked, you know, is that the listeners had to, and we asked them to, but they had to submit nominations. And they received like 1,800 nominations by 280,000 people. And then they had a panel of volunteers, like 50 people, who listened to all the different podcasts and decided what categories they will go into the finals. And they picked 10 podcast for the finals of each category. There are 22 categories. And what blew me away is that Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf was nominated for not only the sports category, but for Best Produced Podcast.
That's a knock on you. So well, congratulations to you as well.
Thank you very much. But
We
encourage everyone to go to podcastawards.com. You can vote daily, and that's the whole part of podcasting is engagement, and we ask you to go every day, every 24 hours, and the voting will close on November 6, 2008 at podcastawards.com.
This is where we need all of our listeners to help us out.
Absolutely.
And, get out there and vote, and we appreciate them as well. So kudos to you guys.
Thank you. Well, you know, we also have two other of our podcasts are up for finals as well. The Golf Smarter Tips is up for the People's Choice Award, and my wife's podcast, Good Dog Podcast, is in the finals for the general category.
Well, congratulations to you guys. Well deserved.
Thank you very much. Now, you know, since you and I have been doing this, you've become, not just because of your Nick's Picks column on edwinwattsgolf.com, but because of what you've done here on the podcast when we started back in, what, September 2006, you've become a trusted advisor to a large number of golfers all over the world. And it's been about 3 months since we've been able to do an Ask Kenny, and I'm very excited that we have the time today to let you answer some questions from the audience.
Yeah, and believe it or not, this is one of the talking to the engineers and the developers is always fun, but the Ask Kenny segments to me is absolutely one of the most enjoyable segments that we do because it's, you know, it's really listening to our core listener and what they have to say.
I guess this time you call that your constituency.
There, exactly.
Well, let's get to it because you got a lot to do today. Things are popping over there. It's shopping season, hopefully. People, would you please shop? Would you go to Edwin Watts Golf and shop? Thank you. All right, that's my political statement for the day. David Largent of Frederick, Maryland wrote in and said, on wedges, what is the main factor that the hosel length has in performance? Now, some hosels are longer than others. So first describe what the hosel is, and then you can answer his question.
The hosel is the part of the golf club that the shaft actually extends down into. Okay? Certain wedges have longer hosels than other, and really it's just a personal preference matter. The longer the hosel, typically the more the shaft goes into the golf club, thus the kick point is actually going to go up a little bit higher. So a lot of your player type wedges that we talk about, the Vokies, the Callaways, the Mizunos, the Clevelands, those wedges have a little bit longer hosel, and thus, you're able to work the ball a little bit more, in my opinion, with trajectory and things of that nature. So, not to discard the wedges that have shorter hosels, say in your traditional set of Callaway, Big Bertha irons, or X22s where the hosel area is a little bit shorter, it doesn't mean that that's not a good wedge. But if you look at the players type wedges that have the longer hosel, traditionally, that particular club increases or moves up the shaft, the kick point, thus bringing the trajectory down, and you're able to control a little bit more the spin and the trajectory of the golf ball. personally, I like a wedge that has a little bit longer hosel, because what you find is anytime the hosel's longer, the actual swing weight of that golf club is going to be a little bit heavier because there's more weight down there as well. And I like a wedge that's a little bit heavier. It feels to me like I can control that golf club a little bit better. So good question and valid question.
Okay, great. Well, congratulations, David, because since we've answered your question on the show, you're going to receive a free Golf Smarter Edwin Watts golf hat. And if you have a question you'd like Kenny to answer, we encourage you to go to golfsmarter.com and click on the Ask Kenny button, and we'll forward the question to Kenny. And if he doesn't answer it on the show, don't worry about it, because he generally responds via email if you have a request or are concerned about something on a purchase. So we encourage you to go to the golfsmarter.com and click on the Ask Kenny button to get your question in. And here's one from Brendan Toohey, who's writing to us from Singapore, Kenny. He says that he was listening to the last podcast that we did with Adams Golf, and you were talking about the effect of having the wrong lie angle, i.e. if the club's too flat for the golfer, then the toe will hit the ground, open the blade, and the ball will slice. Now, he says, I've read and heard this many times, but you're the first golf industry expert I've been able to question about it, because I've always had a problem with what you're talking about. Surely, the above scenario is only a problem if you hit the ball fat. If you hit the ball first, then it's gone by the time the blade does its twisting in the ground. I can accept that the ball slices because the grooves are misaligned or the leading edge makes a greater contact at its angle causes the ball to slice. But to me, it doesn't make sense to blame the ground for creating a problem at the impact when impact is before the club hits the ground on any shot that's going to go further than 50 yards.
I answered this question to him directly in an email as well, what you just talked about. And it brings up a very valid point. If you're what we call a picker of the golf ball, Payne Stewart was great about this, never took a divot, then he's correct. The grooves will be coming in a little bit misaligned, but for the most part, you're not going to see the detrimental adverse effect of having the wrong lie angle. Now, that is a very small portion of the golfing public. The majority of the people do take a divot or actually impact the ground in one way or another. And if the lie angle is incorrect, you're either going to hit the toe first, which is going to open that golf club up and cause you to slice the golf ball, or your heel is going to grab first, causing the face to close down, thus making you hook the golf ball. Okay? And everybody out there listening is well aware of whether or not you take a divot or not. If you take a divot with a golf club and you have the wrong lie angle golf club iron-wise, then you're going to see an adverse effect as to how you're actually striking the golf ball. I mean, that's common sense for the most part, but you know, you have to take that into consideration. That's why we stress the importance of getting fitted. The gentleman that won the MP62s in one of our last episodes called me and said, hey, I need to get the MP62s. I want to get them in steel stiff shaft. And I said, well, have you been fit for those? And he said, no, I haven't had a chance to get that done. I said, hey, here's a great opportunity. You've got a new set of golf clubs that you won that is an absolutely terrific prize. We need you to get fit for these. One, he's 6'1". And he's telling me he needs standard, and I question that. So he goes and gets fit and calls me back, and you wouldn't believe it. He's actually +1 in length and 4 degrees upright. Now, had he gone with a standard golf club, the playability of that iron is not going to be the same as the playability of that iron being custom fit for him. He was going to see an adverse effect and not be able to play to his strength. Thus, if you're taking the correct divot, the club soles correctly at impact, you're going to see a lot better playability golf club. I mean, if it's got the wrong lie angle, for the most part, you're going to see a big difference.
Yeah, yeah. I'm curious, on those divots, now, are we talking about, we're talking about the irons and making divots. The divots you're going to get on your wedge or your 9 or your pitching wedge is not the same type of divot you want from your 4-iron or your 5-iron, right? I mean, those clubs, you want to more get a sweep off the ground, or do you want to get a divot with those too?
Well, it depends on who you are. I like to take a divot or impact the ground with every iron, because when you strike down on the golf ball, thus taking a divot or impacting the ground, that's what causes trajectory. Okay, the ball actually goes up the face of the golf club. You've compressed the golf ball. You've created spin by doing that. Okay, thus you're going to be able to hold that 4-iron, 5-iron, or 6-iron onto those greens sometimes versus if you pick the golf ball. It does go up the face of the golf club and create spin, but anytime you compress it by hitting it down into the ground, you've created more spin and more trajectory. And with long irons, that's where the majority of the people have problems, is getting those golf balls airborne.
Yep.
And you'll see if you pick the golf ball, it's not going to go as high as if you actually take a divot and hit down on the golf ball. Now, what you'll see, the difference being, is on your long irons, 3, 4, 5, 6 iron, you have more bounce associated with that golf club. So you're not going to be able to take as big a divot.
Define bounce. Define bounce when you say that.
Bounce is how much of the leading edge is off the ground at address, okay?
Yep.
Whereas a sand wedge...
So we're talking same type of bounce on your
same,
sand wedge.
Same type of bounce, okay. And I refer to bounce as pitch angle on a roof, okay? Whereas the top of your roof is the leading edge, mm-hmm. and the eave or the soffit area of your roof is the back of the golf club that's actually sold to the ground. This is the easiest way to visualize this, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So your soffit area or where your rain gutters are, the eave, that is the sole that's actually touching the ground, and the very top of your roof is the part that's sticking off the ground. So if your pitch is what we call 11 on 12, very steep roof that you can't stand up on, that has more bounce than, say, a roof that has a pitch of 3 on 12, which is almost flat and you can walk on very easy and doesn't cost as much to build, yada, yada, yada. That type of golf club has less bounce and will dig into the ground more. When you have more bounce, it's harder to take a divot. When you have less bounce, it's easier to take a divot. So those long irons, you want to be able to impact the ground, but you won't see the same type divot that you will with a sand wedge, a pitching wedge, a 9-iron, things like that. So if you look at the guys on the PGA Tour, when they have a long iron in their hand, we're talking about Tiger, Phil, those guys, pretty much all of them. I shouldn't isolate just them, but on long irons, they're taking divots still. You'll see that. And what that does is that helps compress the golf ball, create spin, and create trajectory. So...
And of course, we're talking about getting that divot. You want to hit the ball, then the ground, not the ground, then the ball.
Correct. That would be, if you hit the ground, then the ball, that's called, ooh, I hit that fat.
Yeah, so exactly.
So your divot wants to be taken in front of the golf ball.
Right. Okay.
You know, it's a very hard, if you're not used to taking a divot, or you tend to, your tendency is actually hitting the ball a little bit fat, on the driving range is a great place to put something down in front of the ball, whether it be a penny or something that's not going to impede the swing. The visualization there is to actually remove that item from the shot. Okay, if you hit behind the ball and take your divot behind it, that item's still going to be there. So your focal point or your concentration is going to be, let's get the ball into the ground and let's remove that item. Okay, that's the correct divot that you want there.
Okay. All right, let's move on. Thank you, Brendan, for a great question. We're going to be sending you a hat. Next one comes from Tyrone Williams in Detroit, Michigan. We're coming back to the U.S. of A here. And he says, I was practicing my swing in slow motion. This one, he gets detailed, so we want to pay attention to this. I was practicing my swing in slow motion while looking into a mirror. The first thing I noticed was that my hands were too low at the top of my backswing. After making the adjustment to have my hands in a higher position above my shoulders, starting my forward swing from the ground up, I noticed that I was swinging over the top from the outside in. To adjust for that, I had to drop my hands when I started my forward swing. Sounds like a Jim Furyk swing almost.
That's what I'm just fixing to
say. Yeah, exactly. I guess that is dropping it into the slot.
Yes,
dropping
correct.
The hands feels manipulated. Is this what I'm supposed to do, and is that what it's supposed to feel like?
I mean, look at the guys on tour that have a real high setup at the top. They don't drop it into position. They let the hands go first. So your first movement is to actually, not your hips or anything, is to let the hands start the forward motion for the most part. Ben Hogan had a very low setup at the top on his backswing when he got to the top. Look at pictures of him playing. it's fairly low compared to where some guys are now. Now, here's something to keep in mind and something that I've noticed. If I ever have a shot, let's say I have to get the ball airborne in a hurry, let's say an 8 or 9 iron or pitching wedge over a tree in front of me that's between me and the green, I actually take a real long backswing. I try to keep the sole of the golf club on the takeaway. Now we're talking about going backwards. I try to keep it on the ground as long as I can, extend my arms as long as I can, and have a real high backswing. I get, and you will get, a very high ball flight associated with that backswing. And then some people, when they take the club back at the start of their swing, their takeaway, somebody might say to them, man, you picked the club straight up on your takeaway. Watch the difference now when you go to the driving range. That type of person that takes the club back, what we call short, or has a very low backswing, it's going to be a more penetrating ball flight or a lower ball flight. Okay? That's a couple of things to keep in mind there. And the same thing, if I'm playing a par 5 downwind, I know that I want to take the club back as long as I can. I mean long by, you know, keeping my arms long, keeping the club sold as long as I can, and let that ball get up into that jet stream, versus if I'm hitting a driver into the wind, I want it to be more of a, not so much a shorter backswing, but a lower backswing. I almost want to just pick the club up at address and set it in the playing position and just kind of have more boring trajectory, a more penetrating ball flight. So great point there. I think that what he's doing is he's taking the club back and he's getting set in an outside-in position, and he's actually setting the club into the slot that we talk about and then going from there. It doesn't matter how you get the club back to the impact position. Like Jim Furyk once told me, he said, hey, it doesn't matter how you get there. It's just a matter of getting to the same place you were when you started. It doesn't matter what it looks like to get there, as long as you get there. So if he has to take the club back, set it into position, and then start a swing, that's fine, great, as long as he's getting back to that same position. And that's the key thing here. It doesn't matter what it looks like, as long as you're getting there. And that's the hard part for some people, is to get back to that same position that they were when they started their swing. You kind of understand that, or
visualize
that?
No, that's good. And I hope that Tyrone also understands that. But either way, if he doesn't, he's going to get a hat, because he went to golfsmarter.com and clicked on the Ask Kenny button. Kenny, you know, it brings up a question that I posed this week on our Facebook group. I would love for you to join in on that. We have a discussion board at facebook.com. We have our own Golf Smarter group. And the question that I asked this week is, what does it take for you? How close do you have to be on a par 5 to go for it in 2? And, you know, how comfortable are you with that? And, you know, what distance? So for me, I carry a driver 3-wood hybrid. So if my 3-wood, if I'm 220, 225 out, I'll consider going at it. What about you?
I mean, see, now you get into egos. Every golfer out there has an ego.
That's why it's the Golf Smarter group, yeah. Kenny.
So it depends. I mean, let's take into consideration, there's no water in front.
Right.
Okay, it's basically a par 5.
You're in the middle of the fairway, and you're going right.
Middle of the fairway, and I've got a green.
Bunkers are on the sides. Bunkers are on the sides of the green, not in front of it.
Yeah, I mean, if it's 270 or in, I'm going to go for it.
With which club?
3-wood.
Really? Awesome.
Yeah. And I can chase a 3-wood up there. I can hit a low draw 3-wood that's going to chase for a long ways. I can carry my 3-wood sometimes. No wind, no altitude, nothing like that. If it's 240, 250, I can carry it on usually.
Wow.
But if there's no bunkers in front, no water in front, 270, I'm going for it regardless. Now, I mean, obviously, Golf Smarter, if there's water or anything in front, I use the old Ben Hogan analogy. When you're going to lay up, lay up. If the water's 150 yards from you and you hit your 8-iron 150 yards, don't say, I'm going to take a little bit off my 8-iron and lay up. Because a lot of times when you take a little off, what you think is taking a little off,
you're going to hit farther,
smoother, and you're going to hit it 165 into the middle of the drink.
Right.
So, you know, keep that in mind there when you're talking about laying up on a par 5. Always make sure that you're laying up. The last thing you want to do is waste a shot. You're getting a 2-shot penalty. 2-in, 3-out, hitting 4 instead of, you know, being 20 yards from the water instead of 5 yards from the water. Right. You know, Smarter podcast, Golf Better, smarter golf, whatever you want to look at it. You know, golf smarter tips. Lay up when the situation calls for you to lay up. You would rather hit that shot a little fat and still, you know, still have a shot at the green in regulation than having to, you know, try to get up and down from 130 yards.
Yeah, well, and again, Facebook.com, we have a group. If you're part of Facebook, sign up for our Golf Smarter group. And if you're actually not on Facebook, go ahead and sign up for it and be part of our discussion, because we're a lot of people are chiming in to see what their answers is. And, Kenny, I hope we get you on there, because I'm sure people want to ask you questions too.
Which is great. I will get on there and answer some questions and, cool. and do some blogging. I will tell you that that we've started our own Facebook here as well.
Oh, have you? Okay.
Yeah, we put that into the production area of our e-commerce division, and we've got the page started, loaded. A lot of images in there, something we're very excited about, as well as some other stuff that we have going on. But we won't roll it out until it's ready. But I can tell you, I'm very excited about it. And thanks for the heads up there. I mean,
We'll talk about that further too, because I'd love to help you guys with that and, you know, be part of it, facilitate.
Good deal.
Whatever. All right, let's get on to our questions. This one's from Alan Thompson, who's writing to us from West Sussex, England. He wants to know why you can't purchase irons as single clubs. He says, I have my wedges and 3-iron replacement, so I only need to purchase a 4 to a 9 iron, but most sets are sold 3 to pitching wedge or 4 to sand wedge, etc. This would mean 2 clubs that would be purchased are always left at home and not used. What can he do?
He can special order them 4 through 9 iron and not worry about those other clubs. I mean, if he's buying off the rack, then yeah, he's chances are he's going
to
get a couple clubs that he doesn't need.
So he needs to go to Edwin Watts Golf.
He needs to go to Edwin Watts Golf or edwinwattsgolf.com and special order those golf clubs. Mm-hmm. That way you're not wasting the money on products that you don't need.
Right, right. All right, one more quick one from Chris Coughlin in Monahawk, New Jersey, who's a big fan of not only the Golf Better program, but he's a real big fan of Ask Kenny, and he's even written recently saying, when can we do Ask Kenny again? So I wanted to ask his questions, and it's about range balls. Typically, what type of ball is a range ball, and what are the big differences between them and the ball that we would use for play? I've always believed that the flight of the ball is exaggerated on a range ball. Am I right?
That is correct, yeah. I mean, they use what's called limited flight balls usually.
So it's not really telling you the distance that you need to know that day when you're warming up?
I mean, go watch a PGA Tour event. I advise everybody to go to the driving range. The balls that they're using are usually Pro V1 practice balls. I mean, they just say practice on them. It's a ball that's not a defective ball. It just says practice. They need to know exactly how far they're hitting golf balls. Unfortunately, you're not going to get that on the driving range.
Yeah,
that's why we advise everybody, do that on the golf course. You know, take your GPS or your laser rangefinder and mark. You can, when you hit a ball from that position, you can mark the spot, go to where the golf ball is, and your GPS is going to tell you exactly how far you hit that golf ball. It doesn't take long to do this, but something that's vitally important. I mean, if you got a front pin and 158 yards, and a bunker in front, you need to know exactly how long you hit that golf club. It helps to know. It doesn't mean you're going to strike it exactly that. But, you know, one thing it's going to do is it's going to take, you know, the question factor out of there. If I hit this shot the way that it's supposed to, and I hit my 7-iron 162 yards, I know that I'm going to be able to clear the bunker and fly it just a little bit long of that pin. Now, if you hit it fat and you hit it in the bunker, you hit it long and you hit it in the water, then you can blame yourself and not going, gosh, dog, I knew I hit that golf club. you got to take the guess question out. You got to be able to know for sure. This is exactly where I hit it. And this is something that you can do fairly simple and fairly easy. I mean, you know, if you hit the ball pure on that specific shot, go ahead and measure it. You know, don't get okay, I'm within 20 yards on this club every single time. That's not good enough. That's not good enough. I mean, because the distance between front and back on greens typically is not going to be 20 yards. You want to know for sure. When you hit that 7-iron perfect, go ahead and measure it, see what your distance is, and know those distances. I mean, it's crazy talking to tour guys. I was around one last week, John Cook, who's on the senior tour now and playing awesome. He knows exactly what he hits every single iron to the yard. You know, I mean, these guys are a lot more consistent, yes, and they know the majority of the time they're going to be on a, let's say, 7-iron and down within 5 to 10 yards, even on a miss hit, a bad miss hit. but they know exactly. If it's 162, he knows exactly what club to pull out of his bag.
All right. Well, Chris also wants to know, can too many hits with range balls affect the performance of your driver or your woods?
No.
Okay. Now, let's move on. Thank you, Chris. And again, thanks for listening. Thanks for your continued support. And we're glad that we can answer your question. Kenny, I know that you're tight on time, so let's get to our giveaway. Right now, we have the Adams IdeaTech A4 Hybrid Fairway Wood that we talked about on our last episode and the whole line of Adams IdeaTech. We appreciate them supplying one for our giveaway. And we received 214 entries from all over the world. I've sorted these entries randomly. And you get to select a number, and that will be...
Whew, man, I hate doing this. I say that every single time.
You do say this every single time.
We're going to go with 40. You're going to say, Kenny, why do you pick number 40?
Kenny, why'd you pick number 40?
It's our 40th anniversary at Edwin Watts Golf, so there.
Oh, that's very nice. Well, this club is going to be going to North Carolina, Kannapolis, North Carolina. I've never heard of Kannapolis with a K.
We can Google map that.
Oh, easily.
We do have, and we have a store up. Yeah, we have a store up there in Charlotte now. So
all right.
We're
well,
good
then
to go for him.
Good. So, Robert Freeman, congratulations. You've just won yourself an Adams IdeaTech A4 Hybrid Fairway Wood, and we hope it improves your game dramatically. Congratulations. What are we going to give away next?
Actually, we're going to give away a Nakent Pipe Putter.
Putter. And that's in the PIPE?
Okay. And the reason is, you can see it on the video screen.
Well, Kenny and I are looking at each other via Skype. Maybe someday we'll record this video and we'll make that part of the podcast. What do you think? I've been loving watching you as we do this. This is the first time we've ever done this on video, but this has been a lot of fun. But
yeah, it has been. And I'm sure that the listener would probably enjoy that as well. They can actually see this product that we're talking about. It looks like a two ball, but it actually has a pipe instead of two balls.
See, maybe in the future of Golf Better, we can start doing these videos. And when you start reviewing products, you can show them like you are right now. Look like Carol.
Yeah, and the bounce question, we won't have to use the pitch of your roof, the soffit, the eave, all that stuff. I can actually show you. This is what I'm talking about on bounce. Yeah,
okay.
When you sole it, see the leading edge. Yeah. So there you go.
All right. So listen, we encourage people to go to golfsmarter.com and click on either the Ask Kenny or the Hey Fred button. So if you want to see this as a video podcast, you think that watching Kenny describe this and bouncing in this chair is fun, I got to tell you it is. And maybe we'll make this into a video podcast someday. All right. So the Nakent Pipe Putter, go to golfsmarter.com and click on Contest. And you have a deadline of November 11th, 2008, to get your name in as many times as you'd like and register to win the Nakent Pipe Putter. All right? Very good. Lastly, I just want to remind everybody that as a listener to this podcast, you receive a 10% discount and free shipping on your purchases from Edwin Watts Golf.
Now, some restrictions apply.
Thank you for telling me that, actually. Chris Coughlin, that last question, he wanted to know, does Cobra fit into that restriction?
They do.
Oh, boy. And I know Ping does. There's a couple manufacturers, but if you need your normal supplies, bags, things like that, definitely you'll get your 10%. Not all club manufacturers put that restriction on it, but some of them do. So you will receive 10% off and free shipping from your purchases at edwinwattsgolf.com. If you go into a store, you're going to have to talk to them about the podcast and have them call HQ, have them call Kenny there, and he'll make sure it gets taken care of. And if you want all the information on how to receive your discounts and the free shipping, click on the Click Here for More Info at golfbetterpodcast.com. That takes you right to this podcast page at the Edwin Watts Golf website. And thanks again for listening. We hope that you gained some valuable knowledge from this program and some insight from the master himself, Kenny Nicholson. Kenny, thanks so much for your time today, buddy.
Thanks, Fred. Always a pleasure.
And we
don't forget to go vote for the podcastawards.com.
We're assuming everyone's going to vote on November 4th, but November 6th, 2008, that's the deadline to vote at podcastawards.com, and we encourage you to do it once every 24 hours. Vote for Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf for the best produced podcast and in the sports category. Thanks for your continued support. We love having you here, and we love your feedback. And we'll see you again for another episode of Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf.